Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, nobility, general craftsmen, and skullduggers alike. My name is Jared, and with me, the epitome of nobility, my co-host Ian.
That's me, sir.
We will be your hosts for the episode. We are honored and grateful that you have joined us here at our table. Today, we're at the feature table, where we will be looking at Estate, Raise the Realm, designed by Devin Grodkiewicz, I'm so sorry, and Catherine Hahn, artwork by James W. Owen, and published by Grod Games.
Estate, the Realm, sorry, I forgot the name of the game.
The Realm!
Estate, Raise the Realm. Players take on the role of a noble leader of a great house of great power. Post-war, players will build a beautiful estate over 5 rounds. You will grow your land with beautiful buildings and specialty workers like an assassin or a monk, or build a palace for a queen. You will continue to gather resources and build your estate. The player who scores the most points will be crowned the greatest house of all estates. Let's review Estate. Raise the Realm.
You did mess up one thing there, Ian. We're not building palaces. We're building castles. You're in the wrong era.
That's fine. I don't even know. Like, I don't even know if I could tell you the difference, honestly. Like, a palace and a castle are well beyond. You know, we joke. I'm not noble. I'm not a noble. So I either are well above my tax bracket.
Yes, that's true. Well, things to aspire towards, I suppose.
Yes. Yes. We have more. Actually, we have multiple castles here in this great state of Tennessee. Have you been to any of them?
I have. I honestly blanking on the name at the moment, but the one where they do the Renaissance Festival every year, yeah. I've gone to multiple times. That one's pretty okay. Cool. I don't know about where are other castles at.
There's another castle that we passed going to my wife's parents' house. It's up
on the north side.
Yeah, it's on Highway 24 going up. Yeah, somebody built a castle. I'm not kidding you.
Okay.
That I think it's just for personal use. It is literally on, and it you can see it from the interstate. I have not visited that one. I just see it regularly. So I wave at it.
Ian, if you could live in a castle, if you could afford to do so, I feel like you would.
I mean, I feel like you have to, right? If you had the option.
If you have that option. I don't think there's any choice in the matter.
I mean, I love some good architecture. And
Yep.
And it's a tank. I mean, those things are built like tanks. So
that is the idea. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I guess I don't know if this was the question or not, but I'm just going to go off here. I did visit a couple castles in Europe, which was fantastic. One of my favorites, I think it was in Edinburgh or, I think it was outside of it. Anyway. Somebody will correct me, I'm sure, but it was where Martin Luther was kind of exiled into this castle temporarily out on top of this like mountaintop. It was quite interesting. And man, you could went through, there was this beautiful stained glass and all that. And but you could walk through, it was like, it's almost its own little, it was a castle, but it almost had its own, it looked like it had its own like marketplace all inside. So it was a very large castle that I think they had their own economy there. At one point or another. So pretty neat.
That's awesome. Very cool.
Yeah.
I mean, we have hit the extent of my castling experience. So I'm very happy for you.
What about your estate experience?
You know, I'm trying to build a small estate right now, but unfortunately the tax lords of Lebanon, Tennessee are making that difficult. So
there you go. Okay. Well,
we'll continue the good fight.
You can't win them all.
Yeah, but that doesn't stop the revolution from trying, so.
Yep, there you go.
All right. Now that we've declared war on Lebanon, let's move into what we're doing today, which is talking about Estate, Raise the Realm.
That is the Great War. That's the post-war that we were building.
I will say, Ian, before I get into the quick how to play, the thing that really drew me in, like, we've had a bajillion fantasy games, a bajillion medieval things.
Yeah.
But, you know, you and I have talked before about how we love rooting for a small publisher, and this is their first game. But in addition to that, what really drew me in when I first saw this was the grand vision, if you will, of how there is going to be a narrative that takes place across multiple games within this single world. And I know that we're not there yet. This is the first of many, and that vision is there. And so I loved talking to Devin about what his ideas are. And so looking forward to kind of sharing that a little bit more. We will be dropping an interview later this week, hopefully tomorrow. But if it doesn't quite make it on Thursday, it will for sure be out on Friday. But looking forward to chatting about that a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's definitely something that drew me in. So.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. A vision for a game, but also beyond the game, is always something that's intriguing, and it adds to the experience of the game. Like, you look at any game that has this kind of universe built around it, it does draw you in. And especially when you add to that universe with even more lore, or, you know, whatever it is, it does really draw you in. And I think that's something that can be replicated because it is effective when we're talking about games. So,
for sure. Well, and the other thing that kind of to add to that is, you know, Everdell has done this, and this game takes inspiration from Everdell.
Yeah.
But to me, Everdell builds on itself within the same mechanical structure.
Yeah.
And that is where Devin is kind of veering off in a different direction, is he wants small light games and a huge heavy game, and just kind of going all over the map with it, where they're independent games within this world.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see where that goes, for sure.
Yeah.
Very anyway, cool. Just wanted to get that off the top as our little pitch for the extra bonus episode coming later this week.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Well, tell us. Tell us, Jared.
Yes. Let's talk about how to play this game. So the idea is that we are each nobles rebuilding our estates after a great war. The game is going to be played over 5 rounds or eras. And the idea is that we are going to have different actions that we can take with our workers. It is a worker placement game to try and develop a full estate, scoring the most victory points and coming out the noblest of all the noble. Nope. I'm going to try that again. I don't remember what you said. It was really clever. But being the grand victor of all, I don't know. Guys, this isn't my job. Let's move on. You're going to win the game. Okay.
That's right. You're the greatest.
All right.
For that game.
Jeez. So in this game, you have 4 workers that you're working with. Everybody has their own board, and there's a main board as well. There are 4 actions that you can take on your turn: produce, draw, gather, or expand. We'll come back to produce. We'll start with drawing. Super straightforward. You're going to draw cards. This will typically start out with just 1 card, but as you advance, you're able to build up your kingdom a little bit. You are able to draw more cards with a singular action. Next is gather. Gather is essentially going to be gathering resources in a variety of different ways. In addition to gathering resources, you might pay a ton of wheat to be able to build a new worker. Because, Ian, I don't know if you know how life works, but if you have enough wheat stacked on top of itself, you can make a new person.
I didn't know that. I didn't know. That's crazy, bro. That's
try
crazy.
It sometime. It's called a scarecrow.
I don't know if I want to, but we'll do it.
All right. Very good.
Wheat equals people.
Yep. Everybody's got to eat. So you have resources. You have the ability to gain extra workers. That's more or less what your gather basics are. But the other cool thing is there's some different gather level actions that you can also take depending on your gathering level. If you've noticed now, I've mentioned 2 times where your actions can be leveled up. I'm going to come back to that in a minute. Third is your estate building. You have a hand of cards that have various things on them, whether they be civilians or buildings. They might be a castle. They might be a dungeon. They might be a farm. They might be a monarch. They might be, you get the idea. All kinds of things that you can play into your tableau. When you play a card, you're going to pay its cost. You're going to put it down into your tableau. The only restrictions that you have, you can only have a max of 21 cards. and you can only have 7 of each type. There are 3 different types, and they are associated with the 3 other actions of producing, drawing, and gathering. And when you play said card, it is going to have some sort of ability on it. It's going to have a certain number of points that it gives you at the end of the game. It's going to indicate whether it's a civilian or a building. And it's going to let you level up one of your 3 actions, depending on whatever icon it has on the card. Then finally, we'll circle back around to produce. So when you produce, you get to select a certain number of production cards that you've played into your tableau, and you get to generate resources or actions or whatever it might give you. You can activate a certain number of cards equal to your action's level. So if I have a level 2, then I can activate 2 of my production cards. That's the only time that those cards can be activated. Now, with all 4 of these actions, as long as you can do it, you are able to do the action multiple times with multiple workers. And as you continue to level up, you'll get granted new access. Producing is going to give you more cards to work with. Drawing is going to give you more cards to draw. Gathering is going to focus on those 4 different actions that you can take instead of just taking resources. The stronger your gather level, the stronger an action you can take. And that can really change the game. Estate expanding does not change depending on anything. It doesn't level up. It just is playing cards. So you're going through the game, taking turns, working through your workers. And once everybody's workers are all done, then you'll reach the end of an era. An era card has 2 things on it. 1, it is going to have a ability that is going to be ongoing during the round or a beginning of round effect. And it's going to have a end of round objective. Whoever has the best or the most of that particular objective is going to get first place for the round, and they're going to get 6 points. Second place is going to get a card and a resource. Third place is going to get a card. Everybody else gets nothing. If you tie, you would split if you're on victory points. Otherwise, you get everything that's there. You go through the 5 eras, and then at the end of the 5th era, whoever has scored the most points is declared the winner. Now, there's some minor nuances in there that I didn't go over, but that's more or less a general concept of how to play the game so that you understand what's going on while we discuss. So with that, Ian, let us discuss Estate Raise the Realm.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much to start with here, I think, when it comes down to even the mechanics. But well, let's start with the artwork. I think it fits really, really well, and it's really well done. It's really pretty. Mm-hmm. And again, we always talk about good art, but non-distracting art. And I think that really fits here is that, you know, the artwork itself on the cards, there are some things that I'm sure we'll get into. But overall, the art on the card is not distracting and it looks really good. So I think they did a really good job on that.
I completely agree. And I want to go a different direction as far as talking about it. The structure of everything that's laid out in this game, as far as the board, the cards, it is all super easy to teach. And so whoever, whether it was the designer or the artist that came up with that card structure and board structure, I am so thankful because it is so easy. I will say it this way. It is so hard at times to teach a worker placement game because I'm throwing so much at you so quickly. And if I can easily break down, which is part of the game design of these different actions, but also I can point and clearly show you, this is why upgrading your gather action is important. Or this is what you get when you produce with more actions on it. And it's just every group I've taught, like it just clicks so fast. So I was really impressed with that part of it.
Yeah. And I think within the content, like the art itself, like you have a basic rundown that is very easy to look at as far as, you know, your cost, it's in the top left. Card name, and then what it does, it's in bolded, like the name of the card is, but like when does this ability work, when is it trigger, it's in this bold lettering right there, right above the ability itself. So I think it adds a lot there that you can just quickly visualize what does the card do and when is it triggered. How does it work with my estate? And then also the type of card, you know, on the bottom right there, because there's those three types of cards that really, you know, you're going to be keeping an eye out. And one thing that I really enjoyed is that, like, far away on the, you know, if I'm sitting across the table and the open cards are there, I can see the icon on the table from pretty far away because they're different colors as well as shapes. And so that ability to just say, hey, I'm looking for, like, I think it's a royal card. It's the red ones, I think. It's part of the draw.
The noble cards, yeah.
Yeah, noble cards is that, like, okay, I could see, okay, that's what I'm looking for. There's none out there. Like, it's very clearly, I'm not interested in those cards right now because I'm looking for a specific type. So that was nice. All of the visuals there were good as far as the color scheme and the bold text.
No, I agree. I think, yeah, if I had to quibble about something small, I think there's two player colors that are very close to the same. And I didn't think that was necessary with the amount of other color options that there were, but it only comes into play. It doesn't really matter because most of what you're doing is on your own board. It's only when you place a piece down on the main board that it could mix with somebody else's. Again, it's so small. It was really interesting going through this game. We mentioned before that this is a first-time publisher, and you can see some of the small things that a first-time publisher isn't always aware of, but they were small enough mistakes that none of them really affected gameplay.
No, so they didn't.
Really good. These are just minor oversights that are going to be learned with time. And again, all the major aspects were definitely thought through very well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's something to, you know, celebrate here is that there was a lot of thought that went into this process. Either the play testing and design overall is really, really solid and not a whole lot of issues that you're seeing there. Like you said, the issues that you do see are probably more experience related than anything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's something that you're always watching out for. Like, as an example, one of the icons on the cards or the text on the card, you know, just wasn't super fluid. You know, it could have, there was, I think it was a card where it basically said, if it's this or that, then you could do this, this or this. Where if you just said, like, you know, if it's less than this, do this, otherwise, discard the card or something like that. Where in a lot of, you know, that's just stuff that you... I'm sure at this point, other, you know, a larger company, like it's just that stuff just rolls off the tongue where if you are creating something for the first time, you're like, I can want to say this. How do I say it? And then it kind of gets kind of forgotten. So it's little stuff like that where you can tell it's like, okay, you know, maybe not as big of a company had this, which is totally fine. It's just like it is funny where I enjoy to see the differences between companies and how they handle a terminology or the way to describe game terms is very interesting to me. But like you said, like there's just very minor things here or there, but overall the game pieces are solid as well. You know, it's nice wooden pieces and the little slotted board that they go in is nice. You have the game we played, it's the deluxe components technically.
That's right. Yeah. So this game was originally crowdfunded, and there was a bunch of things you could upgrade. The workers could be upgraded to like individual wooden pieces. I got metal coins. The resources were upgraded, and I think I got a little expansion pack. Were kind of the four things that I got. So
yeah,
we were definitely playing with some upgraded components.
Yeah, yeah, and I think those are good. I don't know what the non upgraded components looked like, but I do think yeah, the upgraded components. Oh, that's one thing is like where, you know, it doesn't sit in the board just like perfectly. And it's like, you know, it's stuff like that you do catch. And like the colors of the resources were very similar in their color, where like the wood and the stone or the wood, or the stone and the iron were like pretty different colors of gray. Not a really big deal at all because they're all different shapes, but it is, I would have preferred maybe a stronger color and different realms. Since we're talking about different realms here, I think that would have been nice. But anyway, to get back to those are the things that definitely catch as you're playing the game. But one thing that I really enjoyed about this game is, you know, your different combinations of play that you can play in a game. And like you said, so you get this board that one gives you two starting, well, one to three, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what the most you could get, but one to two.
I think three
normally.
Three is the max. Two is typically what you're going to be starting with. Yeah, because even the ones that start with just one card then trigger into getting more cards.
Right. Exactly. So it's nice to have those, that setup. You're already given this, you know, ability to just kind of get things moving. And that's always nice in any type of card collection game and tableau building. And so what I really, though, is that when you take an action, like you said, worker placement, you could teach all these different locations. That's all great. In this game, like, the locations are in front of you. And so that, I think that adds to this ability to teach it really well, because you can do something on your board. And sometimes it changes things out on the actual main board, but oftentimes it's doing stuff right in front of you. And so you do have this worker placement that it's not overly complex in the way that I have to remember all the different locations on a board. And so I think that's really nice that you're using the board in front of you to start building this card, you know, tableau. And I think that's a really, really nice way of implementing these different aspects in other games that you mentioned. Some of those do that in different ways, but more importantly, I think that just overall flow and connected, you know, turn is very, definitely very prominent in this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. So as we kind of pivot off of the production of this game, do you have a favorite mechanic? Because I've thought about this a lot as I've played along with various people and kind of seeing how they handle it. So I'm curious what you think.
It's not much of a mechanic. I just like the feature that everybody gets their own tech special ability. I think that's a really nice feature. With that, I think the overall, I guess this is a mechanic, but as you're collecting specific types of cards, it makes that action even stronger. And so if I want to be heavy production and I get production cards, it unlocks the ability to trigger more production cards when I take that action. I think that's an awesome feature. And then if you unlock it all the way to the back, you get an extra 7 points at the end of the game, which is, I mean, that could
be significant.
A significant amount. I love that feature that I can focus in on one or two things and be really good at it. And, you know, obviously you need the cards, but if I can find the cards to fit it and then combo with that ability to do those things, it's fantastic. Because oftentimes, like, let's say you're really good at the drawing and you're drawing 3-4 cards. Well, then you're going to start finding these royal, you know, constituents or whatever, whoever they are, I don't even know which ones they are, that allow you to discard discard cards in some way or tucking them, because you have this massive hand. So you've now built this combo of being good at card draw, and then you happen to draw a card that allows you to tuck for points. And so I think that's a really nice feature that you're able to kind of dual wield, I guess, in a way, of all these different aspects of the game. And I think, you're getting better at one thing, and it does help you with the other things. But I really like the feature that I can focus in on one thing, and like I get better and better at that one thing, and then I get extra points at the end of the game if you basically complete it, you get rewarded, which is nice.
Yeah, for sure. And just to add to that, like, I think because of getting not only your ability, but a couple of cards to start, it really gives you a direction for this is what you want to be working on. And I mention that because I think for me, the thing that I really enjoy the most about this is I really don't want to feel like a broken record, because I know last week, Anne and I talked about Castle Combo, which is a much lighter game than this, but this game has a lot going on, but the simplicity of it is, I think, my favorite part.
Yeah.
Because one of the reasons I want this in my game, for my collection for a long time, is I can bring this out and teach somebody new what worker placement looks like, and it's not overwhelming.
Yeah.
And so that for me is a huge draw, along with the fact that you got a fun medieval theme and the fact that everything clips really well. Speed of the game, the box says 20 minutes per player. At lower player counts, that's definitely true. At higher, I would say add a little bit more. But regardless, you're getting a really solid amount of gameplay in a streamlined amount of time.
Yeah.
You can't say that about a lot of worker placements.
Mm-mm.
The other thing I like too, and I know that when people first, there's a massive deck.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
I critiqued this massive deck in Everdell, because I'm like, you're never going to find the specific cards that you need you know, in the way that you want to. And there is some aspects of that here too. There are times where you're like, I am just digging because I need a particular card. And yeah. I can't find it. I watched Anna get super frustrated when we played last night with a new couple where she was like, I just need this. And it didn't happen. And I was just, I don't know. In that game last night, I lost my key starting card that triggers off of my ability. So I had the Warlord, and obviously the Warlord works with the Assassin. And
yeah.
Constantly killing off civilians, getting new cards, getting resources, that sort of thing. Well, turn two, so the eras have, there's three positive eras and two negative. And in the negative era, I had to kill off a civilian because of a plague. It was my only civilian. This card has wrecked me multiple times. But when I lost my Assassin, I was like, crap, I've not only lost the card, I've lost my ability.
Yeah.
And what I loved about it in the end game, I was able to completely change my strategy. And because of working the cards in a different way, I still came out on top.
Yeah.
And it required a lot of negotiation of changing what I wanted to do. But because of the deck is what it is, there's lots of flexibility to change things up if something is not working. But you got to be careful about it because it's a tight window with only five rounds.
Yeah, it is. It is. It, you know, you're only getting so many cards out there, and the combinations there are limited when it comes to quickly building things. Like, it's, you know, towards that four and fifth round, that's where you start to play a lot of your cards. Up until then, you know, if you lose an essential card for your to help the ramp happen. If you're building a ramp and you just take out a pillar essential for the ramp, it doesn't work very well. So, no, that's awesome that, you know, sometimes that's a feel-good moment in gaming is when you can kind of pivot and change your strategy and have it really successful. I feel like I do that every game because my first strategy sucks. So, you know.
Good at board games, Ian.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I did win my first game of this.
That's true. You did. Yes.
But no, I think you make a good point there. And I think the value of being able to walk into this game, and that also has underlying depth as well, is a really essential part of it. And I think that's a key factor when evaluating this game, because, you know, there's a lot of games similar and they're all doing similar things. But what is going to make this game stick out a little bit? And I think it is a combination of a lot of different rules here that are kind of blending together really, really, really well. And I do think, like you mentioned, with the cards themselves. Oh, that's what I was meaning to ask, is the cards themselves are obviously great. And I love all the different types of cards. I guess I never looked. How many of each card are there? Do we know? Does it say the card breakdown?
I think it varies.
Okay.
Because I know, well, I don't know because I've got some promos, but because I know there's at least four castles in the game.
Okay. I wonder about the farms and like forests and like the kind of more basic resource cards.
I want to say there's three because I feel like I've gone through the deck enough that like I've seen three assassins before, or I've seen three of mages or whatever I'm looking for, you know?
Yeah.
So I want to say it's like three of each or something.
Yeah, and I think I tend to agree there is that there are a lot of cards. The one thing, as an example in Everdell, I think that's an interesting comp here is specific cards, there's six or seven of, where other cards, there's only three. And so like the really strong ones, there's only three. I think what I would have preferred to see, like you mentioned here, is because Anna got frustrated and I also got a similar frustration, is that I kind of wish I would have seen some of those forests and farms and like some of those basic cards, maybe a little bit more, because oftentimes in games like this, like those are essential for building a ramp of some kind and building this kind of starting out platform. And I think it'd be really nice to see more of those. Because, like you said, there is a lot of cards, so I like that. And one thing I want to say is that a lot of the cards kind of work off each other. So you can start to build this kind of combinations of different cards amongst your tableau. And I think that's really nice. I really do enjoy that. I think that's a really good element of this game, is that I can build, you know, a forest. Then I can get, like, the lumberyard. Then I can just start combo, and then I can get other resources and start switching them out for the day. So there's a ton of different combos because there's so many cards. In the end, though, I wish I maybe have seen maybe a couple more of the basic cards because, like, I was really looking for one, you know? That was my goal, and it's like, well, I can't find it, you know? You're just kind of sitting there hoping. And I, like you're saying, if you play with a higher player count, somebody might snatch it up before you, and you're not even going to have a chance at one. So, because you can also have more, I can have two of them. I can have three of them. So, like, there's no penalty. So, in a way, I wish, you know, maybe see a couple more of the basic resource cards. Resource cards are always nice to have, especially in some other games I've played. I think having the ability to do resource cards early is nice. But then, like, what ends up happening is nobody wants them at the end of the game. So, I get it, but
that's what I was just thinking. I was like, you don't really want to put them in the deck, though, because then they're just going to bog everything down. And so I wonder if this might have been played around with already, but you almost like wonder if there's like some basic cards that could sit off to the side that could be drafted instead when you draw, instead of having them bogging down the deck.
Yeah.
But then you don't want to make the deck too powerful, so you have to mix them in. I don't know. It's really tough. Like, I totally get what you're saying. And there were times where I was like, I remember being the druid and I'm like, I haven't seen a forest all game. Like, it's cool that I've got this one forest as my starting card that I can double up. I want to be able to double up more than that. Like, that's where I would need to get to. And I can't guarantee that. So,
yeah, that's the one thing with some of the player abilities really play off of a specific card, which you mean you get one. But like, I feel like that combo would just, you know, you're really sitting there, you're just hoping the entire game to find another one. So it's like you kind of a little lackluster in your ability sometimes when you feel like it could be so much stronger if you got another copy somewhere. So
sure.
No, that's definitely something to consider.
Yeah. The other thing that I find interesting, even as much as I've played this game, I still am not sure what to do with. It feels like you have to have some level of improving the draw track, no matter what else you do, because you'll always end up needing cards. And the cards that feel the most powerful are the ones that let you play it and then play something else because you're getting a 2-for-1,
yeah,
which is great. It's awesome. Even if I've got to pay for the resources on the second one, getting that second card down for one action is incredible.
Yeah,
but key. They're all associated with that draw action as far as what it improves, as opposed to either of the other two improvable tracks. And I wish there was a little bit more distribution on that, because there have been multiple times where I've looked and I was like, yeah, I could play this gather card, which is pretty cool, but this is just going to give me so much more. So it's interesting.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, when you break down the overall cards, and I guess I just didn't think about looking through them all, but because there's just so many, I think. And another example of that is, you know, I more recently played a game where production, I couldn't find any cards, but then also like I wasn't really growing that draw pile very well until the end of the game I did, which was great. I was able to build up a pretty strong estate at the end, but it did felt like such a drag early on, where in the first game I played, like in comparison, it was like I was just zooming. So I do think you're right. I think that flow from the draw pile, I guess I didn't see any, but is there any like production cards that give you cards? Like that would have, I feel like that would be such kind a nice. Of.
So like the assassin is essentially going to let you cycle your hand while giving you points, because you basically tuck a card to then draw a card.
Okay.
But you're beholden to the deck as opposed to like drawing from the face up market. So you could in theory, like just keep drawing cards you don't need. And it is dependent upon civilians. You're not adding. You're adding points as opposed to new cards.
Yeah.
And I think it has its place, but it's still a thing of, I need more. And that is where it gets to be a struggle. And something else you mentioned that I'll bring up, the game, and I think it's to its benefit and detriment, that the game feels different every time you play.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Almost, and it's crazy because most people I play with, like I'll hear them say on game one, I either didn't like that, or man, that was such a slog. And then game two will be the opposite.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll be the first of, man, this game was awesome. And then the second game will be, good grief, it wasn't like this last time.
Yeah.
So like it is always different. And I think there's real value in that of feeling the different ways to play. But if you get used to wanting to play a certain way, that is not guaranteed.
No.
Even within certain characters.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I think this might be by design, and so you always have to take what we're saying with a grain of salt.
And we are, to be clear, we're recording this before we have the interview with the designers next week. So,
sure.
You know, some of this might be answered by the time that interview drops.
But I do find it interesting is that, so like, they're just usually production, you know, requires you to obviously play cards down and, you know, playing the really high power cards, you know, you have to either double up in or whatever combination, you have to have some extra cards to play. A lot of the really good point scoring cards have to allow you to tuck a whole hand of cards away. And then, you know, honestly, your gather, really that entire board, most of those actions, one, you have to discard cards, or you could discard cards for resources, or you have to discard cards for workers, whatever it is. But it's like, there's kind of, you have this, the game builds around having to have a bunch of cards. And so, and there's not many ways to do it except for the draw action. And so that might be fully intentional. And that they just don't give you a whole lot of other choices to draw. Because I don't feel like there was many, there were some that allowed me to draw, but not like, I'm not drawing like four cards. If I were to like max out my draw, I'm not drawing that many, even with cards in front of me. So maybe that's an intentional thing of like, it really forces you to have to build that one out. Like we said, though, it would have been nice to have some other options because maybe I don't want to build that out, you know, but those royal cards, the noble cards are really good. It looks like in most games, you're going to build it out anyway, because those cards are really strong.
Dude, the castle monarch combo where I can play my castle and then immediately throw down the monarch for free. Love that. It's my favorite move in the game because that's like an easy 15 points right there.
Yeah.
Plus whatever else she gives you if I have more of them.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So like I think I understand the design there in a way of, you know, those cards that are really strong are connected to the draw. And so you're going to start unlocking bigger draws anyway. But when it comes to any combos, you know, you kind of want these sick combos of being able to draw things and not be dependent on that one action. So, like, I understand. I'm there with you on that one.
But, I mean, even as we're talking through it, like, one of my thoughts is, like, drawing is really strong. And at least in the way that it's set up right now, you have to commit a worker to be able to draw, which at least slows down the overpowering of having all the cards.
Sure.
Because I almost think we'd be having the opposite conversation if there were certain cards that drew for you, because then we're like, bro, that's broken. Like, just completely OP.
Yeah, you'd have to...
You know, like, it's... You might have to have like, this is worth negative points or something like that. Yeah.
I think you would have to... that the entire deck would probably have to be restructured if you did it that way. Because those cards would be really strong. So you'd either have to have... you know, a good chunk of them that allowed you to do something like that, or some type of, excessive cycling of some kind or whatever. Yeah, they would need to be more prominent in the deck, and you would kind of have to probably restructure how the deck is built. So, yeah, I mean, I get it. It is, you know, it is a frustration, though. You're sitting there trying to draw some cards and you just can't get it figured out.
Sure.
And you know, that's something that we'll discuss, and maybe that's what we're about to do now. But is that, you know, player count will determine how many cards you see in that opening, that kind of market area. Because there's only four slots, even in a two-player game. And so in a larger player game, those cards are probably getting bought a lot more frequently. And it gets washed. And so then you're cycling through those and everybody can see them more. You're kind of cycling through that deck. You're seeing face-up cards. And that's nice.
The other thing, too, so there's a few actions for producing that show up either in gather or other places, and what happens in a bigger player game is there's more of those on the board to pick from, and so those actions get stronger with a higher player count, as opposed to if I'm just looking at my neighbor and you're not even doing producing at all with your cards, and I'm like, well, this is a useless action. But then having more variety, somebody's going to take production. Like, it's just inevitable.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. And I think that's good, especially as you get into a larger player count. I think it's something to evaluate. And within, you know, I will say It's something as, I don't know if I like only four cards in the market.
This is interesting. This came up last night, too.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, no, I don't want to compare it to every other game, but I Everdell or, you know, other games, you just have a much larger market, you know?
Yeah.
There's like eight cards in Everdell, you know? So, like, I like the aspect of having cards that I can see. And if I don't like it, I'll draw off the top. But now, obviously, you know, it's harder because then when your turn comes around, you know, those cards aren't going to be there. Because, you know, one round around the board, I mean, it might be gone, the card you were looking at.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think in general, I've enjoyed that more, to look at the options that are there and be able to react to it than have some, you know, random shot off the top of the deck hoping for the best. So that's a personal preference, but
I mean, I get it. And I agree with you. Everdell is a good counter argument. But on the flip side, our favorite podcast game of Wingspan that we bring up all the time, you only get to see three birds to pick from, and the rest of it's off the top.
Yeah, but so, card drawing, that's much easier. So
that's true.
Yeah, you can draw legs.
You're still committing a full action to it, though. I don't know. I mean, I hear what you're saying, and I think it can go either way. I'm curious how they ended up at four, because there's times where I'm like, man, there's three really good cards out there. And there's other times where I'm like, this is all garbage. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
In gaming, I don't love just random card draw, especially when I'm trying to build something out. It's just not my favorite. I want the ability to draw something off that I can see or whatever 100%. A little bit more often. And I think with four cards, it just feels a little limiting. I'm not saying you have to go to eight cards. I'm just saying five or six would definitely open it up a little bit more. So, or inability to, I guess there is an ability to wipe the, you have to, I don't know what it costs.
No, it resets at the beginning of each era.
Okay. But there's not an ability to wipe it.
No.
See that. Okay. If that's, I would compromise there, then give me an ability to wipe the table or the market. That is one of the most, I will say, that is one of the most underutilized abilities in gaming, and I always love it when it does happen, is the ability to wipe. I'll pay whatever. Like, if I have extra resources, I will pay.
Referencing back to Castle Combo again from last week, that's in there, and it does help the game.
Yes.
So I think it is an underutilized mechanic, for sure.
And yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm it's a conversation. I mean, who knows? Maybe we'll ask that in our review, our conversation. But also, and that's something you could house rule. That's if it's like a really big frustration for you and your group, I mean, that could be determined within your group and get that figured out. That's not a big ad.
And there is an interesting sweet spot, because I'm thinking about cards like the Surveyor or the Mage, who it's entirely it wants you to take the chance, and it is set up from a cost perspective accordingly. Like, you don't pay a lot for the Surveyor. You're paying a little bit to roll the dice and see what happens. And sometimes it works out great. Like, you might have a Mage that combos into another Mage that you basically get to play for free, and then that Mage combos into something else that you get to play for free, and you're like, holy crap, I just scored 10 points and didn't even know what was going to happen.
Yeah, the Mage is really good. The Surveyor,
I love the Mage.
The Surveyor is not as good, in my opinion, out of this. The Surveyor allows you to draw seven off the top, and you're looking for basically one of those resource cards that we talked about. Forests, like, whatever. Again, there's not a lot of them in the deck, and it also costs 3 wheat, I think, for the Surveyor. A very expensive card. For maybe one card, you only get to play one anyway. So I don't like, personally, I don't like the Surveyor, but because it's a lot of risk.
There's a lot of hate at our table.
It's
for the Surveyor.
Yeah, maybe it just didn't hit well, like, multiple times. I never
saw the Surveyor succeed.
The Mage is a lot of a better choice. I love the Mage. The Mage is fantastic. The Surveyor, I don't know. But, he's iffy. He's iffy.
I will say, I understand, and it is a card game that works really hard to try and mitigate on its own without your help, but there is still that aspect. And so,
yeah, absolutely.
If you're going to get upset about the way cards flip, like, it's just not, I don't know if it's for you, man. Like, that's just, it's part of the game. So, anyways.
For sure. The valuable thing to know going into this game is the control factor there is just not always there. And those combos are determined.
But if you like having to react and adapt to what the game gives you, this has got it in spades. And you can make something really cool out of nothing. So I like
it. Yeah, absolutely. No, I think the overall action economy there is, again, you just don't have, you only have four choices really when it comes down to, there's some extra things going on there. But as far as the actions wise, there's only four. And it's really all building upon itself very well. It's not overly complicated in the worker placement design here. And I think the cards themselves are really, one, they're easy to understand mostly. There was a couple here or there that I just had to learn the game. But overall, I think, yeah, it's a really good design here and brings a lot to the table, you know, even to decision making and being able to. And one thing we didn't talk about, you know, you mentioned how the detriment of those era cards. There's some that are also positive. We talk about the bad ones, but there's the positive ones that give you resource or make things cheaper. So like those are all little aspects of this game that I think really bump it up to something that's really fun. And like you said, changes every time you play. I mean, this game's, we play it multiple times and it wasn't the same game twice, especially even you. And then you start changing your character out. You change the starting cards. You change the path that you want to go for. You can just pick a path and you're like, okay, well, I got a couple cards like that. I'm going to stick with gather. I'm going to stick with production and whatever. And you could, there's a lot of options there when it comes to that stuff to change and give this game new life every time you play it, which is really neat.
I want to say I've played, I don't keep up with plays. I want to say I've played this game like 15 times now. And I'm excited to keep it in my collection. It's, in my opinion, it is family friendly because of its simplicity.
Yeah.
Not to say that there's not a lot of game there, but a family can learn it. And like Faith was with me at Tantrum Con when I first saw it. She sat down and played her own demo seat by herself at 9.
That's cool.
And she held her own. Like, so I think it's very accessible.
Yeah, it's good.
9 or 10 is a good starting point for where this game really rates as far as an age rating goes. But dude, it's got me hooked, man. I don't think it's overly complex. I don't think that it's a bear to get started to get into. And I feel like I can teach it super simple. So I'm all for it.
Yeah, that's awesome. No, I don't know if I have as strong of an opinion on that, but I do think it is fits into the categories in which you were mentioning. I think it is definitely family friendly, family weight for sure. I think this honestly is a little bit easier to get into than some of these other games we've mentioned during this episode because of just how simple it is on your board. Not that those games, you know, are overly complicated, but I just think this allows to really dive in and just get started. You're given this kind of, like we talked about, you're given a couple cards to get started and you can say, okay, well, your guy's really good at this, so you should, you know, try that and see how it works for your first game. And I think that works really well. So yeah, an excellent family game that brings a lot to the table. A lot of, like you said, you can start at 9 or 10 and sure, like you're not going to know all the different strategies, but you can play the game and enjoy it. And then, and then for yourself, you've played 15 games, you're trying new things, you really know, you remember a lot of the card names or cards that you're looking for. So like you have this wide range of depth that's the key to a really good family game, is that you do have this range of depth for newcomers and veterans.
Yep. And just as a last caveat, like I know I've said it, it is simple, but
yeah,
it has a lot that it offers. It's not like very automatic. Lots of choices to make.
No, definitely not automatic. There was turns where I'm sitting there, I'm like, okay, do I want to go gather, get some resources, and then hope for this other draw? Like there's a lot of thinking as far as the order in which you want to take your actions, because there are things that you want to trigger before other things. So those are constant things you are thinking about. Absolutely. Yeah. It's not shallow. That's not what we're trying to say here.
For sure. All right. Well, Ian, any other final thoughts?
It's a very good game. Very good family game. I highly recommend. I think it's a different theme than some of these others that we mentioned as well. So I think it's a great design, great for families or anybody that's looking for an honestly quicker worker placement game, even though we talked about a little bit of the length, but overall timing wise is very solid.
For sure. Awesome. Well, thank you all so much for listening. If you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts on the game, we would love to hear from you. All the different ways that you can reach out to us in 2026 are available to you, and the links are in the description. With the exception of Discord. If you would like to join the Discord channel, I would like for you to email me, and I would love to help you get started with that. But the Discord channel is now private because I'm tired of solicitation. And therefore, because of that, we are going to make it a little bit harder to join the channel. But we would still love to have you there if you are actually interested in having a part of the conversation. Special thanks to Ashley McCaffrey for our cover art, for Anna Snyder for all the outro music, and to Alexi Chistelin for the How to Play background music. Join us next week as we head back over to the kids' table, where we're going to be looking at Echidna Shuffle and Hasty Baker. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.